Wednesday, July 16th. The first reading from Exodus chapter 3, verses 1 through 6 and 9 through 12. Moses was tending the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. Leading the flock across the desert, he came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There an angel of the Lord appeared to him in fire, flaming out of a bush. As he looked on, he was surprised to see that the bush, though on fire, was not consumed. So Moses decided, "I must go over to look at this remarkable sight and see why the bush is not burned." When the Lord saw him coming over to look at it more closely, God called out to him from the bush, "Moses, Moses." He answered, "Here I am." God said, "Come no nearer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground. I am the God of your father," he continued, "the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. The cry of the children of Israel has reached me, and I have truly noted that the Egyptians are oppressing them. Come now, I will send you to Pharaoh to lead my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and lead the children of Israel out of Egypt?" He answered, "I will be with you, and this shall be your proof that it is I who have sent you when you bring my people out of Egypt. You will worship God on this very mountain." Haydock Commentary. Horeb is called the mountain of God on account of its height, or on account of God's appearing to Moses there. It is so close to Mount Sinai that the shadow of the ladder reaches it when the sun rises. It is watered with three fine springs, and the summit is adorned with fruit trees. The Lord appeared, that is, an angel representing God and speaking in his name. See Acts 7:30 and Galatians 3:19. The apparitions of God to the patriarchs are generally understood in this sense, so says St. Augustine. Yet many of the fathers suppose that this angel was no other than the Son of God, the angel of great counsel, see Malachi 3:1, and St. Augustine does not disapprove of this opinion. The bush was aflame but not burnt, thus the Hebrews were afflicted but not destroyed. God is styled a consuming fire in Deuteronomy 4:24. He appeared in fire again in Exodus 24:17. The Ethiopian Christians never enter their churches without putting off their shoes. The priests did the like when they entered the temple of Jerusalem, and God ordered them moreover to wash their feet and hands, Exodus 30:19. We observe the same ceremony today out of respect for Jesus Christ when we venerate the cross on Good Friday. Even Pythagoras said, "Offer sacrifice and adoration barefoot." On such occasions, we ought to have our hearts disengaged from the world. See Leviticus 2:25. God takes the title of the three patriarchs because he had promised Canaan to each of them and because they were eminent for virtue. God is repeated thrice to insinuate the mystery of the Blessed Trinity and to show that the Lord watches over each individual as if that one alone existed. Moses had modestly represented his own inability to perform so great a work, and such God generally selects. He encourages him therefore with a sign, to the splendor of which he was then a witness, and with another which should appear in the future, to convince him and all the world that the undertaking was from God, when they should see him offering sacrifice in that place, out of the reach of Pharaoh. Thus a future event is assigned to Achaz and Hezekiah as a sign of something that was to happen first, Isaiah 7 and 2 Kings 19:29. The Gospel from Matthew chapter 11, verses 25 through 27. At that time Jesus exclaimed, "I give praise to you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, for although you have hidden these things from the wise and the learned, you have revealed them to the childlike. Yes, Father, such has been your gracious will. All things have been handed over to me by my Father. No one knows the Son except the Father, and no one knows the Father except the Son, and anyone to whom the Son wishes to reveal him." Haydock Commentary. Jesus gives thanks to his heavenly Father because he had revealed the secret of his coming to his disciples, who, according to the false opinion of men, are called children and fools, and he had hid it from the scribes and Pharisees, whom he in ridicule calls the wise and prudent. By this prayer he also begs that his heavenly Father would complete what he had begun in his apostles. So says St. Jerome. Christ does not rejoice that it was not revealed to the wise and prudent, but because it was revealed to his little ones. So says St. Thomas Aquinas. St. John Chrysostom interprets this passage as if Christ would say, "Go on, Father, as you have begun." Or the sense may be, "I give thanks, O Father, that it has pleased thee to act thus, that since the wise men of this world have rejected the gospel, thou hast deigned to manifest it to little ones."